You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Oh, Eric D. Snyder and Jeff Bayer. They'll see all the movies to tell you which you should watch later. You have seen as many movies as these two.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Baron Snyder. I am your host, Jeff Baer. This is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hey, it's Eric D. Snyder. I'm one of the hosts of Movie BS with Baron Snyder. That's Jeff Baer, the other host. And we're brought to you by OneOfUs.net. And we're the only movie podcast on the internet.
No need to fact check. Let's just move the show right along.
Two really big movies opening this weekend. There's a Star Wars... and a cartoon about a bull.
Yeah.
Called Ferdinand.
Let's just focus on Ferdinand.
Well, we'll get to Ferdinand in a minute. I guess first we should do Star Wars. The Last Jedi.
Yeah, here it is. The final chapter in the Star Wars saga.
Yeah, it says so right there.
Last one.
Last one. All right. Well, I kind of wish they'd wrap some things up a little bit more. Having seen
it
now, you know.
There did seem to be a few cliffhangers still.
Yeah,
almost like it was more like a middle than an
loose
end.
Yeah, it's the penultimate Jedi.
Eric.
What?
I love this movie so much.
Oh, good. Me too. It's a good movie. We saw it separately. And before we talk about the movie, I want to brag about how good a job I did of seeing the movie. I saw the movie Monday morning. And I saw you and hung out with you a couple times, and I said not a word about the movie.
You didn't even – the only thing you told me is like one other person that we know was there.
At the screening,
At the Seattle screening.
About the movie itself, I didn't say whether I liked it or not. I didn't even do like – I can't wait for you to see it. I said nothing. Right. Nothing.
You did a fantastic job, and people were – asking me because like I had either mentioned or they knew that you had seen it and people had asked me what you thought.
Yeah.
And I said, he's doing a great job. He knows.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't said anything.
You like to go in as fresh as possible. And so you also, you don't read reviews. You don't read reviews and then complain that you now know things about the movie, which is what some people do on the internet.
Yes, they do. Or I also don't decide what the movie should be about completely. And then if it's not about that, I don't get upset because it didn't follow my theory of what Star Wars should be.
Right.
Instead, it was its own thing. And gosh darn it, was it ever its own beast. And in such an enjoyable and surprising and comforting way, all at the same time.
I think it's comforting is a good word because The Force Awakens – sort of followed the same, it paralleled the plot structure of the first Star Wars movie.
Yes.
Which was kind of, it was a comfortable deja vu. It was nice. But then
it was the power of nostalgia.
Yeah. This one, though, it does have some similarities to Empire Strikes Back, but it definitely also does its own thing and has nods to the other films, but also goes in new directions and opens up new possibilities, all without – that's what's amazing to me is that it opens up new possibilities like thematically and as far as character growth that are new to the series but that don't contradict anything we already knew. Like it's not undoing anything. It's just adding more to it.
And one thing that I think it does that it felt really good – almost just the same way in the opposite way of like midichlorians feeling bad, like when that happened in Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
There's some surprises on what the Force is capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And I fully and utterly went along for it. There was not one moment for me I was like, hey, the Force didn't used to do that or we've never seen that before. And it's just like, that's what storytelling is supposed to do. It's not just supposed to retread. It's supposed to expand and change and evolve. And this one did. And Rian Johnson, oh, buddy. Such a filmmaker.
Here's the thing about him as a filmmaker is that he is very good at making films.
Mm-hmm. He's doing a job that he should be doing.
Yes, the job of a filmmaker, which he is very good at. Brick, The Brothers Bloom, Looper, and now The Last Jedi.
Yeah, I guess technically The Brothers Bloom is my least favorite of his films, but like that's like a weird squabble.
Yeah, it's the one I think about least often, but it's still, I think it was a B or a B plus movie. Yeah.
So I'm even we haven't even gotten into anything yet, but right now I'm feeling satisfied that J.J. Abrams will wrap up this trilogy.
Right, episode
and,
9.
And super excited that Rian Johnson gets to play in this world again on his own, because this is just the nicest surprise in the world for how good I feel and excited I feel about this universe that I've cared a lot about over the years.
And the new trilogy that Johnson will be overseeing, they're saying will not be connected to this one. It won't be part of the Skywalker saga. As these nine have been, it'll be something else. And so that's, more possibilities when he doesn't have to finish another story. So the deal here, this picks up pretty much right where the last one left off. Rey has shown up at Luke Skywalker's hermit planet. It's a planet just for hermit. I like to think it's a planet of nothing but small isolated islands. On each island, there's a hermit.
And all of them are like, I respect your privacy.
Exactly.
I will not come visit you.
It's the planet just for people who want no visitors.
And luckily, there's some creatures there to help everything along
food,
the way.
You know, there's some aliens that take care of the planet, and also there's some food items and whatever. Yeah. She's trying to get him to come back and help defeat the First Order. And Luke is like, you know what? I tried to bring back the Jedi a few years ago, and there was trouble. And,
I don't know if you know this, but Kylo Ren, not the nicest guy to hang out with nowadays, and I kind of am blaming myself for it.
And he's kind of like, I think the Jedi should just die out, let it go, which is, you know, super helpful, Luke. Then back in the meanwhile, you got General Leia, and she's still
happily played by Carrie Fisher.
She had not died yet when they filmed her in the movie.
And she is trying to keep this very small ragtag group still kicking. And I love the scale of how kind of small this one goes. Like, there's been Star Wars films before where we're like, what planet are we on now? What are we doing now? Who's this? Who's that? And like, this one is just, it feels intimate in her struggle for her people. And that's also something like with The Force Awakens, maybe it's simply because it was the first in a trilogy as well. But I found myself being movie nervous and wondering how they were going to possibly get out of jams.
Mm.
And the movie does a good job of making me feel that, as opposed to just like, well, now we're going to have the rebel forces presented in danger.
Now they're in a situation that they're going to get out of, and then they'll do something else. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It did not feel that way for me. And there's consequences throughout this film, whether it's internal struggles of what you are going to become in life. And I think they do a great job with that with Poe. And then other characters too, just like, what is going to become of me in this crazy, dying, mixed up world? Where the First Order is just going nuts.
They mentioned that they're down to 400 people. The Resistance is now 400 people on this ship, or this fleet of ships. And it is kind of a small scale situation. Basically, the movie is the First Order is tracking them, and it's only a matter of time before they catch up with them and destroy them. And so in the meantime, the Resistance needs to get away from the First Order, somehow get them to stop tracking them. And I mean, that's basically it. That is basically the story of the whole movie.
There's side
adventures. Like, okay, we got to go to this planet and get somebody who can help us turn off the tracking. And that leads to a side adventure. And every time they go on these side adventures, they've all got their own action scenes, and none of them feel extraneous. There's some fun stuff on a planet where there's a – I like the kind of switcheroo of they've got to go to find a hacker. And they say that he's in a place that you really – lots of scum, lots of bad people go there. And so you're thinking like the Mos Eisley Cantina. No, it's a super fancy casino for rich people who've gotten rich off of, the war profiteering, selling weapons to the First Order and the Resistance. And so it's that kind of scum and villainy. And there's lots of fun on that planet. There's a stampede of space horses.
Yeah. And it's beautiful. It's sweet. There's the new character Rose, who, what a great setup with a connection of her family and how she's involved in it, and suddenly how she teams up with Finn and their dynamic together. I really like that expansion.
The two of them kind of have one of the threads.
Yeah. And Poe is it is to me, this character of Poe is doing kind of a similar character of Han Solo.
Yes,
most definitely.
Very much.
But he's also evolving at a faster clip than what Han Solo ever did. And it's working as a character arc. Like, you're believing his reckless choices and that he has the power to contemplate those choices.
Yeah. He has self-reflection, and he's at odds with General Leia. And then General Leia is sort of sidelined for a while. And so Laura Dern comes in, Space Dern.
And at first I'm like, oh, Laura, you just don't fit. Like, you're sweet and all, but you don't fit in this universe.
Why? Cause she's a girl.
No. Because it's Laura freaking Dern, and she's amazing, but she's amazing for different reasons than sci-fi Star Wars.
Well.
And what's great about that character is I thought I had that character kind of and it is. It's a side character. It's, you know, on the scale of things, she cracks the top 10 of importance.
Yeah.
But, like, she's not super high up there. And I kind of felt like, oh, okay, I have this character, this side character figured out. I don't really care for her story arc, but okay.
Right.
But guess what? You sit back and you give this movie a chance, and it's 2.5 hour runtime.
So you go ahead and watch the whole movie.
That's what I did here.
And then decide what you think of it.
Yes.
Interesting.
It felt really cool to get to have her in this universe. And there's this dynamic. There's a moment where she and Leia are talking, and it is significant for me for a few reasons, and I love that moment of dialogue.
Yeah,
and
it's a really good scene.
It's really good and powerful, and it sometimes feels like the movie's working on multiple levels of, like, actually knowing what it means to fans, and then also just deciding to be a good story for story's sake. And that's the thing that, like, I just kept feeling like Rian Johnson's choices kept leaning toward, let's make this interesting, feel new, and be a really high quality story.
Right.
That's what it felt like to me.
He sticks to the formula still by breaking things down into like three threads that we follow one after another. So sort of three climaxes going on at once, like most of the other films have done. I think all the other films. So he's got that formula that he sticks to. There were a couple of things. I won't say what specifically, but a couple of things that I had been computer generated in some previous entries, or at least enhanced that way. Here looked like they were real, looked like they'd gone back to the old style. And either that's because technology got better, or he actually did switch. Either way, it doesn't matter, because it was a nice feel to seem a little bit more practical in a few
totally
elements.
Nice. I'm getting goosebumps with that feeling right now. So and also Snoke.
Yes,
Snoke. I did not like Snoke was for me a weak point in Force Awakens.
We didn't know much about him. He was just sort of this mysterious entity.
And man, for me, who normally stares at CGI and is just like, all right, you use CGI and I see it's CGI and it's ever so slightly taking me out of the scene. But I'm
used to it. 99% of movies do it, but I'm still bothered by it for some reason. Yep. Right. Yeah.
Wasn't bothered by it here. Like it was really good. Like when he's talking to people, it looks really good.
Yeah. And I like what they did with that character. Yeah. We got Kylo Ren, Adam Driver, who, he's sort of psychically connected to Rey now. And Rey thinks that,
so cool.
Rey
so
thinks cool that he's got, still some conflict within him that he may not be totally bad. And then there's some questions about Rey herself, about her origins and her potential and what could happen to her. There's lots of possibilities, and the stakes do seem high because it seems like, for a lot of the film, it seems like kind of anything could happen. Like, nobody is definitely good or bad yet. There's still possibilities.
There's a few just, jaw-dropping wow moments. Whether we're talking about some visuals, I think probably I could list a bunch, but the use of a planet that has salt on its surface is just so good-looking.
Very cool-looking
on the
thing,
screen.
Yeah.
So
nice
good-looking.
Touch.
But, like, even the Luke Skywalker here. I mean, we all know that, like, Mark Hamill hasn't done a ton of movies in this span. And it feels like a wonderful combination of Luke Skywalker and who I think Mark Hamill is. And like his attempt at humor and like that being something that he really cares about, and being able to play this character what feels like the way that he wants to play this character.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked a lot of that.
Yeah.
Like a lot of that.
I like the stuff with him and he and Rey sort of parallel Luke and Yoda back in Empire Strikes Back a little bit with the training and all that. That's all. All the stuff is good. It's long. It's the longest one, but it's not weighed down by ponderous speeches. It gets into so many ideas: heroism and fear and remorse and humility and people dealing with their own personal weaknesses. But it's never feels internal or ponderous or whatever. It all still feels very action oriented and character oriented, fun oriented.
And it totally comes down to hope and really actually, in my opinion, again, feeling that hope this time around instead of people just talking about hope and talking about we need to make a difference.
Yeah.
And also with that running time, I had lost track of time when I was watching the movie. So for me, there's a couple of moments when you know this is the middle of three. You're just like, oh, okay, it's almost for me, I do this with everything. I almost like, I know you look at your watch.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, what I tend to do is like put up my defense mechanisms of like getting ready to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Oh, the vacation's coming to an end, or oh, it's Sunday night, I got to go to school. It's that vibe that kind of overtakes me. And so throughout the final 45 minutes for me, I kept being like, oh, I think, okay, it's probably going to wrap up. I think that's my internal clock telling me it's going to wrap up. And then I'm like, hang on a second. They're starting this up. Oh my gosh. This ain't ending anytime soon unless they just cut right now.
I had no idea it was going to end because they had confiscated our phones. So I couldn't look at the time throughout it, but there was a point where I felt like, okay, I think, there's a part where I thought it could end now and I'll be really sad if it does. Like they'd be justified. I could see this being the ending, but I hope I'm wrong. And then I was wrong, and it did end in a much more satisfying way.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it never felt overlong.
I'm trying to think. I mean, like even the side stuff, like Hux, General Hux,
love him. Donald
Gleason. And I didn't care for him much in Force Awakens.
He's so hammy. But in this one, he's also starting to lose it. Like he's losing his control, his political control, and he's losing losing it, and it's great.
Really enjoyable.
I love him and Kylo Ren sort of grappling for power a little bit.
As far as Kylo Ren and Luke Skywalker probably came out tops for me as far as like the enjoyment, but I'm realizing I'm such an Adam Driver fan in the awkwardness and intensity that he will give to a role in total. It feels like in total disregard of himself. Like he's an actor.
Right.
And he dives into it. And for this, I think, again, his character has evolved well beyond what we saw the first time into something that is a really dynamic villain. That's awesome. That is so cool to be able to believe and see and worry and wonder.
You know what? Adam Driver is really good at playing his characters who have giant weird noses.
Yeah. He's best at
really,
it.
Really, well, I don't, yeah, among the best. Among the best.
Name the better one.
I mean, Owen Wilson is pretty good.
Oh, come on. How dare you?
Like you said, this is about hope, and I think that's another difference between this and Empire Strikes Back. Because Empire Strikes Back feels like the middle part of the trilogy where, this is the downtime. Like, our heroes have suffered. Now we got to come back. This has a different kind of vibe. It has a more hopeful ending. You're feeling hope, and it makes you feel like, yeah, we can take down the Trump. Or, I mean, the First Order. We can, we can do it. Whatever we have to do, we can do it.
That's the thing. Yes.
Yeah. Man. So it's a great movie for our times, and it's just terrific.
For me, there are a couple of lines that feel ordinary next to otherwise really fun or clever or meaningful dialogue. So I'll say that. And I think I didn't love the side adventure of Ben and Rose maybe as much as you, but I still really liked it.
Yeah.
I never minded being on that planet, even though there were times where I was just like, this, I hope this feels purposeful when we're done with it, as opposed to it just being,
it does tie into everything and sets up things for the next one. Yeah.
And the fact that there's interesting layered personal conflict and excitement for multiple characters with multiple other characters is really awesome. It is awesome to think of Finn and then think that there's two characters that I'm really curious about how they evolve in Finn's life.
Right.
Like, really genuinely curious.
These characters all, affect each other in different ways. It is not just, it's not just how does Han feel about Leia or how does Luke feel about Obi-Wan Kenobi or whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. C-3PO, R2-D2, Chewbacca. They're here. Don't worry. They're here. Your old friends are still here.
And as far as those three, I think Chewbacca comes off the best.
The other two don't have a lot to do. Although R2-D2 has a moment that almost made me cry.
Oh.
I give Star Wars The Last Jedi an A-.
I give Star Wars The Last Jedi a 10 out of 10.
Nice.
You know how you and I were talking about, like, oh man, we gotta get that top 10 list going soon. We gotta start thinking about that.
Are yours all The Last Jedi?
I think I just got the movie juice I needed.
Yeah, great stuff. All right, so there's your Star Wars. Go out and see your Star Wars, kids.
If you want to.
Don't let us tell you what to do, although I guess that kind of is what we're doing. Just telling people what to do.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you can't, if Star Wars is sold out, and or if you just really love bulls, there's a movie called Ferdinand. It's a cartoon about bullfighting. The problem with making a cartoon about bullfighting is that bullfighting is cruel and terrible.
It's barbaric.
It's a shameful tradition.
Visually looks completely and utterly inhumane.
Completely and utterly. Yeah.
Yeah. And they don't even have udders. Like, you have to imagine the udders to be a part of it.
So this is a cartoon about a young bull named Ferdinand who turns out he doesn't want to be a bullfighter bull.
What's he want to be?
Pretty much anything else. He just doesn't like fighting is the thing. Doesn't like fighting. It's not because you would think the reason you don't want to be a fighting bull is because the bulls always get killed. That is not his issue because he and the other bulls are not at this point aware of that. They know.
Are they eventually aware of it?
Eventually, yeah.
Oh, okay.
The movie lets him in on that eventually.
The balls on this bull.
Right.
Are there any balls on this ball?
Of course there aren't. It's a cartoon.
Should be balls on the ball.
I agree, but I didn't draw it.
No.
The voice of Ferdinand is John Cena. And what happens, the matador comes to the bull farm and chooses the bull, and the bulls are all like brave and, oh, I hope he chooses me, because they know it's glory. You go to the bull arena and whatever. But Ferdinand is not a fighter. He escapes from the farm and finds a nice girl, becomes the pet of a little girl. Sort of what happened to the donkey in that Birth of Jesus movie, The Star, a few weeks ago.
Okay.
Bull becomes a girl's pet, but then, wouldn't you know it, ends up, he grows up with the girl, but then ends up back at the farm again. So now he's with the other bulls competing for the matador's attention. And so the main problem here is that the movie is about something that it's not proud of.
It doesn't want to dive into it,
right?
It's set or anything.
It's set in Spain, not Mexico. And I believe the movie was half over before I was able to pin that down. There's not really any indication. But it's not, and so I kept thinking of Coco, which is all about celebrating this Mexican heritage and culture in this thing. This is not like that. This is set in the world of bullfighting, but not with any real cultural flavor or flair or appreciation. Again, kind of for obvious reasons, which makes you wonder why they would make a movie about a thing that they don't actually support. But whatever. Bulls are cute, I suppose. So it's very culturally bland. It's an average, colorful cartoon, you know.
Does John Cena come across as funny?
I mean...
As Ferdinand?
He has personality. Okay. I don't know. There was one thing where if a bull isn't good enough to be a fighting bull, they set it off to the slaughterhouse. They don't call it the chop house. They call it the chop house. And that place, the bulls know that's bad news. They know that that is, you're dead if you go there.
Because they show what actually happens in the movie.
No.
Oh.
The chop house is just up the street from the farm. And I guess somehow they know that you go in there and you don't ever come back again. And it takes a while before it dawns on them that when you go to the bullfighting arena, you also don't ever come back. But eventually they do realize this. They realize that bullfighting and the chop house, both death sentence. So they rescue a friend out of the chop house, and then, you know, they got to stop a bullfight and whatever. You know, it all ends happily ever after. It does not end with the matador murdering the bull like he's supposed to.
You know what's going to happen if this movie becomes big time?
Yeah.
Kids everywhere are going to want to adopt bulls.
That's probably true. There'll be a lot of unwanted bulls showing up at the shelters.
Always happens.
Yep.
And then the realist is a bad choice. Who's the comedy MVP of this cartoon here?
Oh, that's right, Kate McKinnon. She's a goat. When he shows up, when he winds up back at the bull farm again, she's his comfort goat.
So she gets to go on the airplanes with him.
Yeah, exactly. She's there to calm him down, and she's kind of funny. I'm Lupe. I'll be your calming goat. So good for you, Kate McKinnon, for being kind of funny. Because it's not like they didn't really write any funny lines for her, particularly. But so if you have kids and they have to see something about animals that talk, then I guess there you go, Ferdinand. See? Yeah.
You know, sometimes you make me wish I would have seen the movie.
Yeah. Was this one of those times?
No.
Yeah. I feel like the people who made the movie weren't that really into it either. Like, I don't think I'm any less enthusiastic than
they
were.
It's almost like they saw Coco and then just like,
sure. All right. Yeah, Hispanic culture. Yeah, there's something Hispanic and sure, bullfighting. Isn't bullfighting cruel and mean and everyone hates it? We'll worry about that later. Let's make up the posters first.
I didn't realize this. For some reason, I thought this was Disney, but it's not.
It's not.
Like, not Pixar, but just Disney.
Not Disney. It's not. It's not DreamWorks either. It's
Blue Sky under 20th Century Fox, which, of course, now is Disney.
It's the same. The logo at the beginning had that stupid Sprat from the Ice Age movies. So it's whoever made those movies.
Oh, yeah.
So here's a movie for you. Darkest Hour. You remember that movie Dunkirk?
Yeah.
It's that, but from a different point of view. It's the other side of that. Well, you had the soldiers in Dunkirk trying to figure out how to get home. Back in England, you had Winston Churchill trying to figure out how to get them home. And that's Darkest Hour, all that's going on.
Yeah, this one from Joe Wright, who directed Atonement, Pride and Prejudice, amongst others.
Hannah. Yeah, and Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill. And if you know one thing about Winston Churchill, you know that he looks like a fat bulldog. And that Gary Oldman does not look like that.
But guess what?
Makeup and prosthetics.
That's right.
A lot of it. And it looks very good.
Oh, my goodness. Does it ever. Like, I was done looking for Gary Oldman in about 5 minutes tops. And that shocked me.
I was prepared to. I didn't know. I hadn't read beforehand what the process was. I was prepared to accept that he had gained all the weight. I didn't think that he had, because I feel like I would have heard about that, but it's very convincing added weight and jowls and all the stuff they do to his face.
You do? Is it on Instagram that you follow Gary Oldman's weight?
Sure.
That account? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it would have been.
Well, just usually here, like, I've heard about, and I've seen pictures of how Christian Bale is getting fat to play Dick Cheney. In some,
yes, that's true.
Like that. I heard about that. I hadn't heard of Gary Oldman getting fat. But yeah, and he apparently agreed to do the film only on the condition that this particular makeup artist would design the makeup and do it he just said otherwise it wouldn't be good enough. And this guy, Japanese, I can't find his name now, apparently a widely acclaimed makeup guy. And Gary Oldman was like, if he'll do it, I'll do it, but otherwise, no. So this guy like came out of retirement to do the makeup, design the makeup and the prosthetics for all this. So, yeah.
Really fantastic. He might get a couple of shiny things at some point, maybe.
I should think so. I don't see that I've seen better makeup this year in a movie.
And that's Darkest Hour.
He's Churchill, and it begins begins, well, we're in the Dunkirk situation, the Battle of France. Hitler is like speeding through France, taking over, and Neville Chamberlain has been the prime minister, and everyone has just had it with him now. This,
yes.
You Hitler coddling Neville. So
right.
He's got to step down. Everyone in his party, they want to get, they want Halifax to take over. But they're like, nope, the opposition will only accept one person. And it's
no,
Churchill.
Not him.
And everyone's
not
like,
him.
Sure enough, it's Churchill. And I love the way we're introduced to him. He's mm-hmm. first yes. time we see him sitting in his bed, working from bed, grunting and belching and drinking. It's sort of having breakfast, giving some garbled telegrams to his new secretary, who's Lily James, by the way.
Yeah, and I love how rough around the edges he really is. Mm-hmm. Like they don't try to gloss him up, really. They show plenty of his faults.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only one really trying to gloss him up, and it's such a wonderful character. She nails it every single scene she's in. Kristen Scott Thomas plays Clementine Churchill, his wife.
Yeah,
and she like every scene she just nails in this film.
She's so great and such a good addition to the story. Where she is telling him, she has noticed that he's become crankier lately, and so she gives him this very gentle reproof. She loves him, but she corrects him, and she's like, you know, if you're going to be prime minister, you have to be kind. And I really like their dynamic because he loves her too, and they've been together for 35 years or whatever, and they have a really nice relationship, and I think that adds to it. And so the movie is about the issue here is that Chamberlain and Halifax and some others in the party, they want England to enter into peace negotiations with Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe there's still a chance before he – because once he takes over France, he's going to come invade England. And so these guys are like, well, maybe we should talk to him. And Churchill says, no, never, 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 eventually. But the movie is about his confirming that is the right decision.
Yeah, and through that, there's like the speech editing process was really awesome showcased
here.
He's
a great speaker, and we see him really, really pouring over his speeches and working on them.
And just also his arrogance in a sense of let's kind of potentially mislead to achieve our goals.
We need
was
to
just fascinating.
Yeah,
to me.
not tell the people how bad things actually are in France right now, because then they'll say, yeah, let's just give in and give up.
Yeah.
So instead, let's let them think we're hanging in there and positive thinking. And that is a huge gamble, because if that had turned out differently, because Churchill was already blamed for a costly military disaster in the Battle of Gallipoli in World War I. So he's already got that hanging on his record, and he definitely doubts himself in this movie. Like he's pretty sure, but he also knows it's possible he could be wrong, and it'll be disaster for the country for him. Mm-hmm. And also the king, it's the stammering king, Ben Mendelsohn this time. It should have been Colin Firth again, because it's the same king, you know.
I understand that, but getting to see cleaned up Ben Mendelsohn was pretty awesome.
That's always nice. He doesn't really like Churchill, so you got the prime minister who doesn't really have the support of the king very much, trying to figure out what to do. And I really like seeing. I think Oldman is great. If he retired from acting now, this would be a perfect.
Why?
He's not. But I'm saying if he did.
Why do you want him to?
I don't want him to.
Then don't bring up such ideas, Eric.
If God forbid he were hit by a bus tomorrow, this
there
would be
we go.
A fine,
that's much better to think about.
A fitting ending right. to his career.
Now, you're an investigator, and I don't want to give anything away mm-hmm. to the people that are going to go and see this movie.
England does not surrender to the Nazis. Spoiler
thanks.
Alert.
Okay. All right. There we go. No, there's a scene that takes place on a subway.
I half-heartedly looked. I don't think there's any way that scene happened.
Okay,
and it's
such a good scene. But
it's a good scene.
It feels fake.
it feels fake. It is undeniably stirring, but fairly ludicrous. Where he Winston wants to get the opinions of the ordinary folks on the subway, and it's stirring and patriotic. and probably not true. And right. I feel like the rest of the film is so good that I forgive that. I forgive that bit of indulgence.
I do too. It feels like an Oscar bait film that I just don't care that it's Oscar bait.
Yeah, because like, I don't think it's being flagrant. Kind of I think it's being flagrant. No. I think it's Oscar worthy without being like, right. Hey, come give us awards. Gary Oldman has always wanted to play Churchill. This is something that he's long thought about.
Since age 8, I guess he kept trying to do it. Or I don't know. I don't know what this story is, but yeah, he finally got his chance.
Joe Wright knows what he's doing as far as making a film, and of course, Atonement also. Briefly had a Dunkirk scene, as I recall, or some reference to Dunkirk. And yeah, I like what Oldman is given to do here. They give him lots of bits of Churchill's speeches. And of course, he does the impersonation, but also really captures the weight on the guy's shoulder and how he's still trying to be, he can be very humorous and self-deprecating one minute, and then get up in Parliament and just give a fantastic speech. And you can see why the opposition even ends up supporting him. And he's just such a great speaker. I think they said something like he weaponized the English language or something like that and sent it into battle. Like he does with words, he make you be him opinion with words. What else do I like about this movie? I guess those are all the things.
Yeah, those are all the things.
Those are the main things. Yeah.
Yep.
And I'm glad they didn't give in to the Nazis, because his whole thing is like, oh yeah, if we have negotiations with Hitler now while he's taking over France, I forget the exact metaphor. It's like you can't negotiate with the lion while he's got your neck in his mouth.
Well, and you know? If they did, then it wouldn't really be a historically factual movie. Well, like if in the movie they decided
right,
to go the other way,
if England had. They probably would not have gotten any better terms than if they just fought it out. And that's
so Churchill's you're kind of happy about what happened to Hitler. Is that what you're going on record as?
Yeah.
Like the way that England did it and everything. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Noted.
Churchill
put you down as anti-Hitler.
Yeah. Well, finally. Now, if you had asked me then, I probably would have. I mean, who knew? Who knew at the time? Churchill did. He was one of the few in the 30s who was telling England this Hitler guy's bad news. And everyone's like, no. Neville Chamberlain impersonation.
I thought that was just you doing an English accent.
Darkest Hour, I give it a B+.
Darkest Hour, I give it 9 out of 10, and I really want to call it The Darkest Hour, but I won't.
It is really hard not to. All right, so last week we mentioned that Patreon had done something screwy. That was messing with our agents.
Well, they're back again doing more stuff.
Yeah, well, and they're undoing it. They realized they made a huge mistake. Everyone hated what they were doing, and so they changed their minds, which is good. I appreciate when a company can acknowledge they screwed up and undo it. I wish that they had realized it was a mistake before they did it, before they told everyone, before we told you. But anyway, neither here nor there. So, but here's the gist of it. All it means is that instead of being per episode, we're now per month. To be an agent, you have to contribute at least $4 a month, which, if you do the math, works out to $1 a show.
Yep. I just crunched the numbers.
Mm-hmm. $4 a month, that's your agent level. Now, you can contribute less than $4 a month if you want to. And thank you. We're grateful for every contribution, aren't we, Jeff?
Yeah. Wait. Yeah.
Yes. And that's great. Thank you. But you're not an agent. You won't get the agent perks if it's less than $4 a month. So currently, many of you have already updated your pledges to be $4 a month. Some of them are still stuck at $1 a month. You had it at $1 a show, but we switched to monthly, and so it converted it to $1 a month. So you can leave it there if you want, but like I said, then you're not an agent. So, you know, it's up to you. But maybe people who are fine, you know, giving $1 or $2 a month, but not $4, and that's fine. Yeah. You know, every little bit helps. And we're still working toward the goal. Once we get to $400 a month, then we'll add that second weekly show.
Yes, we will.
We've been talking about bonus BS.
Smells good.
So I think that's all. What a Patreon is probably still going to make some more changes, but they won't be the kind of changes that affect you so much. So don't worry about it. For now, I think we're settled.
I will not. Thank you. I am done thinking about it.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you to all of our agents, one and all. And again, we have some things coming up we'll be giving away in January, a couple copies of screenplays of some some prestigious movies and some books and things like that. So yeah. And only for agents. Only agents are eligible
and
for those.
And maybe also just like bigger or more. Instead of one thing, you could get three things.
Right.
Who knows? Who knows?
It's really going to pay to be an agent is what we're saying. Yeah. So get on board. And speaking of our agents, well, here's something we're giving away right now. It's a Blu-ray DVD of the movie Home Again.
A somewhat acceptable surprise of mild, nice enjoyment.
I believe that's what the posters said. Yeah. Home Again. You have Reese Witherspoon. And it was written and directed by the daughter of Nancy Myers, filmmaker Nancy Myers. So it was as nepotism-based projects go, it's pretty harmless.
Yes, it is.
It's like a sitcom. It's brightly lit. And it's, you know, cute. Reese Witherspoon. Anyway, you can win a copy. If you're an agent, we have a copy to give away. Just send us an email and tell us you're interested, and we'll choose one of you at random. Jeff, what's our email address?
MovieBSPDX@gmail.com.
Very good. So that's out on DVD this week. You can rent that or buy it if you want to. Also, Detroit, which was a well-intentioned but difficult movie.
Slog? Is it a slog?
Kind of a slog, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Kingsman, The Golden Circle, which is also a bit of a slog.
Yeah. Why are you suggesting these things to people?
They're the movies that are coming out on DVD this week.
Still.
Oh, hey.
Mean.
The Trip to Spain. The Trip to Spain is really funny and then has a crazy ending. Steve Coogan and what's his name?
Man. I totally forgot about that ending. Yeah, what's his name?
Rob
Corddry. No, that doesn't. Rob Brydon.
Yes. Rob Brydon, Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon. They had the trip, then it was the trip to Italy, now it's the trip to Spain. They drive around, eating food, improvising jokes with each other. Very funny. Anyway, that's on DVD. And I think it's on Netflix. I think I saw that it's on Netflix, too.
It's too bad Rob doesn't have a lot of talented brothers, and then they'd call themselves the Brydon Boys.
Mm.
It feels like that would make sense.
Or the Brydon Bros.
The Brydon Brothers.
Brydon Brothers. Yeah.
Maybe one more B.
Maybe he does have a lot of brothers. We don't know.
No, I said talented.
Maybe he has a lot of talented brothers. You don't know his life.
Mm.
And those are the DVDs this week. And that brings us to the conclusion of this show. Just to recap, I don't know if you remember, there's a really good new Star Wars movie.
Yeah, I kind of liked it.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that your first 10 of the year?
I think Raw is a 10 as well.
Oh, maybe so. So Star Wars The Last Jedi. It's funny that so many of our listeners have already seen this movie by the time they hear this.
Yeah, yeah. So they're either going to be like, how dare you? Or they're going to be like, yes, I totally get it. I agree. As opposed to, I don't know what I'm saying anymore.
Darkest Hour, also about people gathering hope to fight against the First Order.
That's right.
Also good stuff. Also BS approved.
Very good. Very good.
And then Ferdinand about bullfighting. It's the cartoon about bullfighting that you didn't know you wanted.
And you still might not?
You don't particularly, yeah. No, you know, nobody really wanted this movie.
All right.
There you go. We'll be back next week with a bunch of reviews next week. Oh boy, all them Christmas movies coming out. So put on your movie pants for next week or something.
I wore R2-D2 socks to watch the movie. Mm-hmm. High-quality R2-D2 socks. They were pretty awesome.
That's nice. Yeah. So until next week, for Movie BS with Barry and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
Hey, Eric. Yeah. When we're done with this, can I call you and can we talk about Star Wars more?
Yeah, all right.
And I'm Jeff Baer.
Thanks for listening and good day.
I said good day.